And there is one that he's not a party to. Several of the girls are suing the U.S. government, hoping to overturn that plea agreement.
We're going to do part two. Post online at democracynow.org. Julie Brown, longtime investigative reporter at the Miami Herald. We'll link to her piece, Perversion of Justice. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at KBOO.FM/grantwriter2018.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next on Positively Revolting, Ani and Teresa anticipate the top stories of 2019 and take your calls.
Attention, KBOO supporters. We apologize for the nonsensical on-air acknowledgments that have aired after recent membership drives. We assure you that those responsible have been dealt with appropriately, and the spot they conceived for this promo will never air. Please enjoy this message instead.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our deepest and sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's Give Guide campaign. Your support makes KBOO possible. Thank you!
Ah, free of complexity, controversy, and most importantly, hawk screeches.
Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Cotton Cloud Natural Beds and Furniture, women-owned since 1981, providing sustainable wood furniture, locally handcrafted futons, latex mattresses, and more using organic and natural materials. The Cotton Cloud Showroom is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland, online at cottoncloudfutons.com.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are tuned to your very own community radio station, KBOO. This is Ani, and this is Positively Revolting. I am here this morning with Teresa. Thank you, Teresa, for joining us.
You're welcome. Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And Teresa Mitchell, the most commonly heard on Thursday mornings at 9 o'clock as the host of Press Watch here on KBOO Community Radio. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'll just go ahead and admit she's my beloved partner. And so she has agreed to come on in this morning and help us look at the news ahead, right? We have the peeling off of the page of the Gregorian calendar, and we know that this is both a thing that is manufactured, it is a contrivance. You know, there is no real basis for the shift, you know, except for the fact that, you know, Gregor decided that this is the best way to keep track of time, and every 4 years you add a day because, you know, whatever. His calculations are impressive, but it's the Gregorian calendar, which the Western, globe uses. So we have it, and we have that change of cycle from 2018 to 2019. And because we are in society, you know, we put significance, you know, on this shift from 1 year to the next. We're going to look right now at the year ahead. We're going to take this opportunity to just sort of stop and see the stories that are coming up. And that's one of the reasons I really wanted to do this, was because, as we mentioned on last week's program, we're in this cycle of 24-hour spin, right? The breaking news spin cycle is full of distractions that keep our heads just going back and forth, trying to chase down the really important matter of the day, which can change throughout the day. We are really on a path that is quite unsettled. One of the reasons for that is because we have this administration that seems to really enjoy sort of rule by tweet, right? We have a president who decides that he is just going to put out the most bombastic, inflammatory tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then suddenly that is the headline for the day. Whatever he sort of wakes up with determines the headline of the day. And that's no way to really focus our attention on the ongoing crises that we are in the midst of. And so I wanted to sort of take a moment and actually sort of dissect that spin cycle, and then look at some of the more substantive stories that we cannot lose track of, no matter how many tweets Trump's thumbs hammer out there at 3 o'clock in the morning. No matter, you know, what the president might say to distract us, his policies are the thing that we need to focus on. And the fact that he is a buffoon saying it from behind his Twitter account is just that. It is the story, however, that is meaningful. And so to that end, I know I am pretty focused on what's happening with immigration, with the ICE detention centers, with the facial recognition technology that Amazon wants to supply immigration and customs enforcement. And those stories are really, to me, some of the most important stories to follow this year. Teresa, where are your thoughts this morning?
They're all over the place. But so I'll just go with that. And I'll pick a topic that's off to the other side, and it's about transgender rights. Earlier this year, there were reports from trans women who went to renew their passports, tried to travel, and found out that their passports had been revoked, and that they were told that they must now prove that they had had surgery to continue, well, existing as a first-class citizen. And I mentioned that on the air. And now NBC News is coming out and quoting the National Center for Transgender Equality and saying that the basic policies haven't changed nationally. However, that's not really the problem. The problem wasn't people saying that the basic policies had changed so much. It was that there had been guidelines secretly sent out that tell clerks to hassle transgender people and to prevent the issuance of passports. So I decided to test this by going to the other end of something that's controlled by the federal government, which is handgun approvals. So to do this, I went to Sportsman's Warehouse and discovered that I couldn't go through the process until I'd actually purchased a gun. So I bought the smallest gun that they had, and they screwed it up and made me buy two of them. And I said, whatever, I thought I can get my money back pretty soon anyway. When the guns arrived, I went to the store and took the took the test. I didn't take a test. I filled out the form. They said, this can take up to 30 minutes. Well, an hour later, they said, well, you have not been approved. You've been delayed. And so I called to find out why I'd been delayed, and they would not answer me. They basically gave me the runaround, called back, and said, this is us calling you back, and didn't tell me anything. So, yeah, I suspect that, that's statistically insignificant, but I suspect, since there is no reason to, under the law, to deny me a handgun purchase, that federal guidelines are also being applied to this. They want to make sure that transgender people don't travel, don't have handgun rights, and don't feel like they're first-class citizens, and that is red meat, for Trump's base, which is a continuance of his policy. So I suspect very much that is what is going on. Bad news for trans folk, and I guess now I'll have to undertake the scarier process of checking the status of my passport and seeing if I'm still allowed to travel to see my in-laws. I don't know. So there's that. There's also some stories over the last year that just haven't gotten a lot of attention. For example, Philadelphia Superior Court Judge Leon Tucker ruled in favor of Mumia Abu-Jamal. You heard that right. Ruled in favor of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the journalist, prize-winning journalist, author of 10 books, who was framed up for the murder of Daniel Faulkner back in 1981 and has been in prison and most of the time on death row all that time. So Philadelphia Superior Court Judge Leon Tucker said that the actions of former Pennsylvania Supreme Court Judge Ronald Castile demonstrated a lack of impartiality and the appearance of bias. A major victory for Abu-Jamal that opens the door to a new trial or dismissal of the murder charges against him after an appeal to the Pennsylvania courts. If you look into that scene, you'll find that it was a case in which he arrived on the scene in which his brother was being attacked by cops, and what exactly happened, Mumia won't say, but he's being charged essentially with firing a bullet that killed Faulkner that is larger than could be fired from the gun that he possessed. So in other words, he was framed up. So there's that. And then there's the climate.
And so much more. So this is where we're going to ask you to go ahead and join us. What's got your attention right now at the beginning of the year? I want to remind you that Linda Tirado, who is the author of Bootstrap America, Living in Bootstrap America. She's also an incredible force in the Twitterverse. She recommended, and has been an often guest on Positively Revolting, she recommended at the beginning of this administration that we keep a truth diary, that we just keep some notes, every week, talking about where our attention was, like what was huge, what was important, what was, oh my God, this is amazingly horrifying stuff and we have to all get behind it. What is that? Sort of on a week by week, if not daily basis. And to kind of look back through that and see how narratives have shifted, to see how the propaganda and spin that is coming out of DC is just phenomenally distracting at this time, it to sort of have your own internal navigation system, right? So that we can actually live with context and know what is happening, as opposed to being reliant on that, again, mainstream media spin cycle. And so I want to recommend that. What is in your truth diary? If you've been keeping one, how are you following this narrative? And what are you expecting to come up in 2019? Where do you think our attention needs to go in 2019? 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. I'm Ani. I'm here with Teresa. This is Positively Revolting on your community radio station, KABU. I also want to remind you that we are with you throughout the week on Facebook. You can like our page on Facebook. You'll find us there, Positively Revolting, or in the Twitterverse, at Positive Revolt.
You know, I can think of things that make me happy about things that have turned out this year, things that are happening now. I mean, when I think of Joanne Bowman's, I did it again.
Joanne, I believe Hardesty's, you mean Joanne Hardesty.
Joanne Hardesty's face. This is what happens when you get old, you know, just whatever sat on you first. That's Joanne Hardesty's face in the city council seat where Dan Saltzman's used to be, or if I think of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's face sitting there in the House of Representatives, that's pretty cheering. Those are the faces I like to think about.
There has been really positive news in that last election. I am also elated that KABU, longtime KABU volunteer and host Joanne can do her policy. She can actually write policy instead of watchdog it. And I am elated for that change. Same with many of the newly elected congresswomen. I am elated, actually, that we are seeing what we're seeing. And that's cool. There is a breath of fresh air. There is a breath of, we can do this thing. We can make this place better. I don't want to say we can take the country back, because most of us haven't had it in the first place, right? I mean, the majority of Americans have been disenfranchised forever since the start of this country, starting with the stolen lands and genocide of the First Nations, of the Native people, and add to that the forced labor and enslavement, the kidnapping of Africans, and forcibly bringing them to this country. That is the legacy. So there's not really a lot of let's go back to the way we used to be that I, you know.
Yeah, and all the women. What year did women get the vote?
Yeah, it's been bad for most of the people in this country, for its entire history. But I do think right now there is this kind of wonderful moment where we could come together and figure out what we actually want. What we actually want to make this place like. And I think that's kind of exciting. So that gives me a little hope for 2019. 503-231-8187, the number to call, just like George did. Let's go ahead and talk to George. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning and Happy New Year to all of the people listening, and especially, of course, to KABU and all of its staff. I'm calling because there is one issue that I think everyone who has a talk show on KABU and everyone who works there is keenly aware of. And for some reason, I think there are so many other stories that are horribly painful and very important, some of which you mentioned. But that one issue is covered in a book by a guy named Michael Parenti, who is now, I think, in his, I don't know, late 80s,
yeah.
Maybe?
I love Parenti. I was just talking about him the other day. What is this issue?
Well, he wrote a book about it. It's called Democracy for the Few.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the rule of, guess what? Capital.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's been a pledge premium at KABU before.
But not for 20 years. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're old again, Teresa.
I know.
That's true.
And so I think you and all the people who have talk shows, and you're keenly aware of this, and I would like to urge that this issue, which says basically if you look at what's really going on, is that money, capital, whatever you want to call it, is really the ruling power, although the people do get their voice out, and from time to time we get a real break when, God forbid, some people in Congress and maybe some judges decide to get square with us and do the right thing, but it doesn't happen enough. And I would like to say we need a fundamental change in our economic political system, which is, you know, sometimes called capitalism.
Yep.
And I'd be interested if anyone else wants to call in, or you guys want to talk about it briefly or at length. I want to thank you. So I just want to hang up and listen to the show.
All right, George, thank you so much for your call.
Yes, indeed.
Parenti is one of my favorite authors, actually, and I've had the pleasure of interviewing him a few times over the years. Man is a wonderful curmudgeon, I just got to say. I would recommend, if anyone has not read Parenti, that you do read Democracy for the Few, that you do read The Sword and the Dollar. The Sword and the Dollar came out in the very late 80s. And I have to say that it was eye-opening for me. Maybe it came out in 90. It was one of the first books that clearly laid out the U.S. involvement in dirty wars and imperialism that I availed myself of, which got me thinking in the bigger context of the CIA and the U.S.'s dirty wars. Whereas before that, I was mostly focused on things happening within this country. And so on more domestic issues, that Sword and the Dollar brought me more into the looking at U.S. foreign policy and the horror that we perpetrate around the world. Capital. Yeah, actually coming right up. There'll be a show sometime very soon. I'm working out with another KBOO volunteer, Joe from the Old Mole. And I have been talking about doing a show on class. And I believe capitalism would have to be a part of that. The world cannot afford capitalism anymore. It is a tyranny. And I'm just going to go ahead and flat out say it.
You know, I can see some good news on that front as well.
Cool. Can I give this one little factoid before we get to your good news?
No.
Come on.
Okay.
Thanks. So Fat Cat Friday. This is actually put out from a UK source. Top bosses in the UK earn 133 times more than the average worker. I believe, and I need to double check this, but that ratio I think is actually off even more in this country. But according to this article, Fat Cat Friday top bosses, by 1 o'clock this afternoon, the UK's top company bosses will have already earned the same amount this year as the average worker will be paid for the entire year. So that would be, oh yeah, yesterday and half of today. And they, well, oh, I take it back. I must have, yep, that's right. Yep, 2.5 days salary or a year's salary, your choice. So that's what capitalism brings, right? Go ahead. I just wanted to throw that factoid in before it got lost.
And Mark Zuckerberg raked in $23.1 billion last year. Just $23.1 million. And if you look it up, it doesn't say that he raked it in or that he extracted it or that by the capitalist rules of his company he amassed it. Amalgamated it. No, none of those. They say he earned it, which is just a ridiculous verb to apply to that. He didn't earn that much money. He soaked it up. But the good news I was getting to is that the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest movement in France. Seventh straight week, an article by Max Perry and Counterpunch says demonstrations continued across the country even after concessions from a cowing President Emmanuel Macron, while inspiring a wave of similar gatherings in neighboring states like Belgium and the Netherlands, just as Al-Sisi's dictatorship banned the sale of high-visibility vests to prevent copycat rallies in Egypt. Corporate media has predictably worked overtime, trying to demonize the spontaneous and mostly leadership working-class movement in the hopes it will not spread elsewhere. Of course, I hope that it does spread, and I saw a yellow jacket here yesterday. It was on Jenka.
It's true.
So of course, Jenka's going to be in the vanguard.
I mentioned this to her. And I want to say thank you to Ray. Ray, our engineer this morning.
Yay, Ray!
Has given me the other factoid that suddenly I realized I did not have at my fingertips. Thank you, Ray. He says that the top 10% in this country earn 198 times the average pay of the lowest paid 90% in the U.S. And so, again, with this kind of disparate earnings...
Maldistribution.
Yes, that's the other word. That's going to have implications, right? For so much. And we can get into that. But I, again, want to hear from you. 503-231-8255. 8187 is the number to call this morning. Join us. Join us here as we look at stories ahead in the new year. So I want to mention, you had talked about Zuckerberg. There's also Amazon, and when it comes to the mega corporations that rule the world.
Bezos.
And I'm not sure what Bezos earned last year, but let's say it's got to be close to Zuckerberg. I mean, you know, they're a little neck and necky.
He earned my disapproval. Well, he amassed billions.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, nice distinction.
Thank you.
I want to mention this, and I want to mention it in a way to say, you might consider never buying from Amazon again. Just might consider that. Amazon pitched its controversial facial recognition data to ICE. And this is not just one of those things where it's like, oh, they have a product or they have a technology they've developed that is faulty and fraught with some issues to begin with. But hey, and ICE went to them and banged on their door and begged for it. It's not like that. It's more like this. This is a story by Ryan Grenoble, and it's from the Huffington Post in October. Amazon pushed Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials in June to purchase and use its controversial facial recognition technology. That's according to Amazon Web Service emails obtained by a government watchdog group. Documents turned over to a Freedom of Information Act request by Project on Government Oversight show Amazon's technology subsidiary offered up its real-time recognition, and I'm just going to say it's recognition spelled with a K, which makes it look extra fascist.
Ew.
It's recognition video analytics software to aid ICE's Homeland Security investigations. Amazon touts the technology on its website as capable of providing real-time face recognition across tens of millions of faces and detection of up to 100 faces in challenging crowd photos. Amazon Web Services and Department of Homeland Security officials also met in mid-June in California offices of McKinsey & Company, a consulting firm that formerly worked with ICE. It's unclear how exactly Amazon proposed the technology be implemented. The email from Amazon Web Services only vaguely refers to a big Homeland Security problem. So I could go on, but I think you're getting the idea, right?
And so, fascist and Klan and Nazi police would never use that to find you in a crowd just so they can go beat the crap out of you.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. That absolutely couldn't be misused. And I'm also just going to say it is the technology is not quite there yet, right? And that we know, most especially when it comes to non-white populations, that the technology messes up even more. And so, again, we have this gigantic corporation pushing a fascist tool to be used by fascists. And meanwhile, those of us enjoying Amazon services like videos or whatever, you know, we got to starve the beast. I'm just putting it out there. Amazon is not a neutral. Amazon is an evil. And I'm putting it out there. My wish for 2019 is that we actually deny corporations that would like to hurt us. We actually deny them money. So that is, I would like to just put it out there.
Well, I suppose it's easy enough. If you want this, that, or the other, you can go to overstock.com. I don't know. They may be beasts, but they're there. And
I like
divide
to go
and
to
conquer, right?
People and, who have businesses in towns,
right?
With
or
stores.
Or if you want to order a book, you can go to the Union, Powell's Books.
It's true. I mean, you know, again, I get the convenience of online shopping. I get it. I've even done some of it. But when it comes to supporting small businesses, maybe even if you're doing the online shopping, you could online shop at small businesses. There are businesses owned by people of color. There are businesses owned by women. There are businesses owned by people in the LGBTQ community that really could use your dollars and support, as opposed to the mega conglomerates that are there to rule us. Again, let's just shift our own economic power as much as we can to try to do our own communities some good.
That's my dog's nickname, Mega Conglomerate.
That's kind of a long nickname for your dog.
It's a big dog.
It's true. Let's go ahead and talk to John. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hi, honey. This is your friendly cable janitor.
Yay.
About the new people coming into Congress, and which I'm really excited about. My one concern, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, is that it seems like the Democratic leadership and Pelosi are really right on top of this of disempowering these people and wanting to drag them into the neoliberal fold. And
boy, howdy.
On that. I'll take that off there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And this is going to be the thing, right? I think that it's going to be... I don't know that I've ever wanted to really support Congress critters before. I usually don't look to electoral politics to do much good. This is, you know, from all of my time as being a grassroots organizer, indirect community sort of stuff. I just haven't seen it. But again, this breath of fresh air is happening. And to see the establishment attempt to diminish it is disheartening and predictable, right? And so whatever we can do to amplify the voices of those that have just been elected, let's do that. I know that you know, Pelosi starts off by quoting Reagan, right? And trying to harken back to, I don't even know what she was doing. Well, she's appealing to the establishment. That's what she was doing, because that's what she is.
Corporate money Pelosi.
But yeah, how can we make sure that the establishment does not throttle the new breath of energy?
They certainly have a jump on it already. I mean, with their committee on health care, they've already switched that up. Their committee on science, on climate science, is already watered down so they can avoid the Green New Deal. And this is just part of Pelosi's tricks. And the news on climate is just not good. There's an article in the Washington Post saying 1.5 degrees is the most stringent and ambitious goal in terms of the Paris Climate Agreement. 1.5 degrees maximum warming. It just isn't going to happen. They say they originally put it there at the behest of small island nations and other highly vulnerable countries, but is increasingly being regarded by all as a key guardrail, as severe climate change effects have been felt in just the past 5 years, raising concerns about what a little bit more warming would bring. And they quote Durwood Zilke, president of the Institute of Governance and Sustainable Development, saying, half a degree doesn't sound much till you put it in the right context. It's 50% more than we have now. The idea of letting warming approach 2 degrees Celsius increasingly seems disastrous in this context. And then if I go out of that context and speak for myself, there is a confluence, as there has been for years, actually, of new information, new sources of greenhouse gases. The latest one that I saw is methane that is actually being emitted from the underside of retreating glacial sheets. So Greenland and presumably Antarctica, pardon me, are being detected as major emitters of methane. And it's being put out as methane and not broken down into carbon dioxide right away, which makes it, I think the figure is 8 times more effective as a greenhouse gas. So this is just another thing that you add on to, for example, albedo change on the glacial sheets on the world's ice cover, on the and that's from the soot from industrial emissions, which are just increasing and increasing, and also the melting of the Arctic ice also has a feedback effect. When it's gone, that changes the albedo of the North Pole, so it absorbs more heat. Not only is it not reflecting more, but it is absorbing more, if I can make that distinction. There are so many of these things that have been discovered. The methane capacity of the world's tundras was just discovered in the last couple of years. Add that to what we already know about the world's clathrates. That's something that's been known for decades, and something that I passed along here on KBOO radio. It's like we're finding all of these sources, and they're not just sources of greenhouse gas. They're indicators that we've gone too far already, and we're already in a feedback loop which will create a rapidly, more catastrophically rapidly warming planet. And as I was reading from the Washington Post, we're already observing global warming signs that initially were said not to be at least, they were said to be at least 50 years off and sometimes 100 years off. And now they're already happening. And so if I can jump ahead and make a very unpopular prediction, I think we're at the point where, as much as I hate geoengineering, I think we're going to be at a point pretty soon where we can choose some geoengineering or we can just die.
All right. And it's like, where do you come back from that comment? I don't know. I agree with you, which is why I'm just like, let's go ahead and talk to, well, we have folks. I do want to say, you know, that new Green Deal, though. Again, is it enough? It's not enough, but it's a great step.
I think it's hugely important. Yeah, we got to push that.
It's hugely important. And so it's something, again, to get behind and to keep pushing. And it's something that the establishment doesn't want to see.
Yeah, and the other thing they don't want to see is us understanding where the greenhouse gases are coming from. They're coming from the Pentagon and industry. You know, maybe you can slack off on that extra plane trip or, you know, not drive your car as much. They love you to think that you're the key. You're not the key. We have to stop the Pentagon, the major source of greenhouse warming on the planet today.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk with Natano. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just want to encourage the people that have been sitting on the sidelines silently cheering and shaking their pom-poms to make the effort to lift their phone and dial the White House switchboard, 202-456-1111, and find out, you know, which representative you want to talk to, and I think you can get their numbers there, and encourage them to not get sucked into the neoliberal, you know, Goldman Sachs, Clinton-style routine that has turned thinking Americans off, and try to encourage these people to stay the course, so to speak, and do the right thing, because these, you know, for some reason people get in there and they get sucked into the machine and then they lose.
Yeah, and we see that
perspective.
We do see that quite often, and so I think what you're saying is very important, like making sure that the folks that have just been elected understand that there is a groundswell supporting them to stick with their ideals and to not be suckered into the establishment.
Yeah, because it's a lot more effective to do it before you call and complain about something bad. It's a lot more effective to do it now and say, you know, you've got a lot of support, and just, you know, you push them in the right direction, because if you don't push them in the right direction, they're going to get sucked into the machine.
Yep.
And it doesn't, you know, this is a very critical time, but and then try to encourage them to focus on carbon fixing, which is our only solution to the problem. The real problem that no one is talking about is that we've got hundreds of nuclear power plants at sea level. These things can take 5 to 7 years to shut down. The sea level is going to take off like a rocket, because we're not on a linear timeline here. Just like Teresa says, we are, things that they thought would happen in 50 years are happening now. And biological systems always occur with a hockey stick graph. You know, you go along and then all of a sudden this feedback loop starts in, and then it just, you know, logarithmically accelerates. And we need to get the damn nuclear power plants shut down that are on at sea level before it's too late, and start fixing carbon. And we need to plant hemp wherever we can, because it's, you know, twice as efficient at carbon fixing as trees.
All right. Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Yeah, right on. In addition to what you say, I think we can have those yellow jackets. I mean, heck, we've had Seattle 99. We've had Occupy. We've had masses in the streets and gigantic in millions. We can do it.
Yeah. And I would point out that really the masses in the streets that had built a global movement against corporate dominance.
Dominance.
That that movement was stopped more or less in its tracks with the big event in New York on September 11th, 2001. And coincidence, who knows? Parenti, going back to Michael Parenti, you can either be a coincidence theorist or a conspiracy theorist. But not all conspiracies are created equal, right? So I think that it is important to remember that we had a thriving global movement. Yes, it was 18 years ago now, or 17 years ago, but we can, in fact, have a thriving global movement again. Please let us reach out across borders and work on ending corporate dominance, including supporting our climate in an urgent way, because, in fact, our lives depend on it, right? The life of this planet depends on it. All right, we have so much to talk about. Let's go ahead and take the next caller. Good morning. Good morning, Malia. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning to you. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Okay. My comment sort of goes back to the beginning of the conversation in relation to Amazon, and I was very, very happy to hear your comments about it. I hold the same view. And one of the things I wanted to implement into that perspective is the fact that Amazon has bought out Whole Foods. And as a longtime organic grower here and very much into the grocery business, not that I own anything, but I support the hardworking companies that have started here with roots that offer much better quality than Whole Foods, that I'm letting people know that there's a huge disparity in how Whole Foods treats customers now. Prime people get a better advantage. And I read recently the one-year review since they bought it, and they really are headed to a, you know, to turn food shopping into something that is much like Amazon Prime, where they will eliminate the people that work in the stores. And we really need to think consciously about how our communities are going to be constructed and what kind of stores that we want here. I lived here at the time, there wasn't anything but Fred Meyer's. And to see all these big corporations and these out-of-state, you know, business come in and compete with our longtime mom-pa businesses, you know, that it people really need to voice and put their dollar where their voice is. And you know, they can do a lot by putting their dollar where it counts, is what I'm trying to say. And I think that it was important for me to articulate this because people don't realize what's going on with Whole Foods. And I think there's three or four of them in Oregon and plus the 365. But they aren't doing very good because people actually, you know, without even knowing this, just don't like their stuff and the expense of it.
Yeah.
So to implement this consciousness that it's now owned by Amazon, I think people really have a great choice in our state to, you know, determine what kind of businesses that they want in their state and what they don't. And I don't have as much faith as one of the other speakers in the Democratic system here. I just see a lot of negligence in the government. All different economic, you know, statuses equally. And, you know, so I think people really have to voice their opinion. And one way to do that is through your dollar.
You know, that's really set me on fire.
Yeah, absolutely true. Thank you very much for your call this morning. And Fred Meyer isn't actually a mom and pop business anymore either. Just to,
yes, owned
to,
by Kroger, yeah.
To point that out, it was about 20 years ago, actually, that Kroger bought them out and that they are now basically, I think, the largest supermarket chain in the country. But that said, still not Amazon. And that's something.
I have something to say about that.
Please.
Well, Bezos, I'm really glad that the caller brought that up because Bezos bought Whole Foods in order to expand his model of automation. And so what he wants to do, he's doing this in his warehouses as well, but he wants to expand something that's already been tested. He wants to put automated electric carts on the streets and sidewalks to deliver food that you order online. And earlier, that was part of a sneaky little popular measure that was put into the vote. And people were saying, what was this about? It was about this sort of expansion. And fortunately, it went down. They're going to try to avoid taxation for what they intend to do. But this change that he wants to do, not only will it push people out of actually working in the grocery stores, it will eliminate drivers as well. It will crowd the roads with automated vehicles. And the money that this generates, this tremendous money, is generated by denying all of these wages, pensions, health care. It creates this phenomenon that Bezos is doubling down on, and that is taking the world by storm, pushing workers out altogether. And the wealth that is created by all this work that is done by these robots is then aggregated to the big companies that had the wealth in the first place. And so they get all the money, and all of us who work, you know, whether you have a high school education or a PhD, you get shoved out by all of this automated stuff. Automation is coming to doctor's offices, by the way. It just doesn't stop. There's so much that can be done by a computer very soon. This year, the next year, coming up, this aggregation of wealth is going to get worse and worse and worse. And I think there needs to be a tax on Whole Foods and all of these efforts to push workers out. And productivity that has been taken from the workers and put into the robots must be shared with the general population one way or another. And I think one way to do it would be with a basic general income.
Yes, couldn't agree more. Let's go ahead and, you know, again, there are a few stories we haven't actually talked about. I know we have some folks on hold, but I just would be amiss if we didn't mention a couple of these things. One is actually being put out by Project Censored. And for folks that are not familiar with Project Censored, I would recommend you get familiar with them. Again, they have often been on the air of KABU. DVD's Hard Knock Radio did a year in review special and a year ahead special on Monday that we aired here on KABU, where he spoke with Mickey Huff, who is currently their director. And hopefully maybe we can get Mickey on Positively Revolting in the next few weeks. The number 12 story out of their top 25 for the year is that ICE intends to destroy records of inhumane treatment of immigrants. Project Censored looks at stories that are super important but underreported. And so this story broke in October, and you've heard very, very little about it. A couple of mentions on KABU and maybe a couple of things on the internet. But this needs to be known. And the story says, in recent years, numerous news reports have highlighted illegal or inhumane actions committed by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials in their attempts to expel, the story says, illegal immigrants. I'm going to say people without documentation. Despite the severity and frequency of these abuses, any official records documenting them may soon be destroyed. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, ICE officers in the past year have been given provisional approval by the National Archives and Records Administration to destroy thousands of records that document unlawful ICE actions. What could be the purpose of that? What good could come of that, right? None, in fact. That's certainly something to keep your eye on as that develops, and something to really decry. It is just horrifying. Another thing is to really keep our eye on is the fact that this administration has quit answering questions around the UN Commissioner on Human Rights. That for some reason it's decided that this is just not important enough for this country anymore, which does two things. First of all, denies information to the UN on human rights in the US, and it also kind of emboldens other human rights abusers around the world in their ability to not cooperate with international treaties, to not supply information. So this is a story that was put out actually on Common Dreams. Quietly and unnoticed, Trump administration won't cooperate with UN investigators on human rights violations in the US. This is great news for Saudi Arabia, China, North Korea, and Syria. If the US doesn't have to answer for the suffering it inflicts on its own people, why should they? I'm going to leave it there because, again, I know there are people lined up to talk.
Oh, but I just got to.
Okay, got to.
I mean, one of the things that's interesting about that article in Common Dreams, which, let me see, is called Quietly and Unnoticed Trump Administration Won't Cooperate with UN Investigators on Human Rights Violations in the U.S. is a big part of the human rights violations they're talking about is the maldistribution of wealth, is making people so impoverished they can't afford an apartment. And if they can barely afford an apartment, they can't afford anything else and have to scramble. I mean, the poverty in this nation is just gigantic, and we've been trained to think that it ain't, that we don't have the poverty. This is a very poverty-stricken nation, and it is a human rights violation. So I was really pleased to see the UN acknowledging that. And, of course, the Trump administration is just going to be like, oh, go away.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk to the next caller. Echo Saint. Echo Saint, are you there? Good morning, Echo Saint. All right. I'm going to move on ahead. Echo Saint, come back to your phone. Kari, good morning. You're on the air. Good morning, Kari.
Good morning. Good morning, Ani.
Good morning.
And Teresa.
Good morning.
I'm wanting to kind of ask about something that I rarely hear in the news, and that is the new replacement for the NAFTA that was such a big deal for Trump to run on in his campaign. And I'm mostly concerned that it's such a huge underlying cause for drug wars, privatized police, climate crisis, and the reason why we have people rushing to our borders. And it's just something that I rarely see in the news. It's a corporate kleptocracy that is been rewritten, and it's going to go to the Congress here to be signed soon. It was signed in Argentina during the G20, I believe. And I'm just wondering if you guys could make some comment on that and hold that kind of in front of people, because I just rarely hear about it. And it just seems to undermine any other democracy that we might pretend to have.
Right. Well, I mean, global free trade agreements overall are bad news for the people.
Free trade,
right.
Yeah.
Because we really need fair trade, not free trade. And I don't have specifics on that in front of me. And I'm not really prepared to talk about what he did bring into being. Although Teresa's looking at me like maybe she is.
Well, it's reminding me of what Noam Chomsky said recently.
But what I do know is that when we see, I mean, NAFTA was one horrible trade agreement, right? And what we saw with GATT initially, then it was sort of amplified by NAFTA. Then it was, sort of again on steroids with the WTO agreements. That what we see is a race to the bottom each and every time, as these agreements supersede the local laws protecting workers and the environment.
Exactly.
And so it's we defeated the agreement around the. Oh my gosh, I can't even remember the name, but it was the Pacific, it's the West Coast.
TPP.
Yes, thank you. I was going to say, it had initials. It was like T and there was a P in it somewhere. Yes. Exactly. I mean, and again, these things, whenever they come up, we have to really address them because they're never in the people's interest. They're never in the interest of the planet or the people. They are always there to suck up more money into the global elite.
And I did find the specifics on that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, especially since, unelected corporate officials can come in and completely undermine our laws. And it kind of makes it so our Congress people are moot. Laws are moot.
Yeah, that's
it
exactly what I was looking
everything
at.
If they are able to, say, oh, this interferes with our ability to get profits. And that is, indeed a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
For the earth.
In Trump's new agreement, they're called BITs, Bilateral Investment Treaties, and they lock in initial conditions that are attractive to investors that are linked to vertical investment flows and investment and trade competition. In other words, lousy wages and conditions get locked in. They also constrain the provision of welfare benefits or basic infrastructure. The lock-in and constraining effects are sources of popular grievance and dissent in states that host foreign investment. BIT-protected investor rights, however, limit the ability of governments to back down vis-a-vis investors, lowering the relative cost of human rights violations. So it's more of the power and the hegemony of the rich is locked in with this new Trump post-NAFTA agreement.
Yeah, it's a big one, and I just, you know, I don't know, you know, how many people in Congress are really kind of putting this in front of people's eyes, and so I appreciate any conversation to be had on that. It's really a scary situation. I think it drives a lot of things that people are fighting, you know, individual causes, you know, for, but this is the underpinning, you know,
yeah,
of a lot of problems.
Thank you, Kari, very much. And look for more info on a show coming up soon. Because, you know, what I'm getting, actually, there's a pretty distinct picture coming up for me this morning that people want to talk about class and that the incredible, I won't even say threat to democracy, how, in fact, the global concentration of power and wealth by the corporate rule intertwined with some states, how that denies us basic human rights, and it denies the climate, it denies the planet what the planet needs as well. That needs to be a pretty strong focus, is what I'm hearing. That is what is on a lot of people's minds this morning, and for good cause, right? We have only 3 minutes left. A couple folks on hold. I'm going to get you on for a real quick comment. Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Ani.
Hi.
You know, it might be a great idea to get some of those local small businesses or even national small businesses who have internet presence, and you know, maybe put them on your website, or you know, say some words and help them out, and maybe they'd be grateful for that.
Yeah, for sure. And however we can all, you know, again, support small businesses, recommend to our friends that they really go to not a giant mega corporation for their needs. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. We should promote that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Excellent suggestion. And good morning to Linda. You are on the air. You'll be our last caller this morning.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, and I didn't know if you heard it, but an underreported story was that the Trump administration wants to have disabled people not be allowed to get a ban on disabled people immigrating to the U.S. And I read that in a couple papers. And
yeah,
it reminds you of Nazi Hitler's. Anyway, in Germany, when they asked for people to turn in their disabled people, and people were experimented on and killed. But anyway, the Trump administration has really proposed this. They have not yet done an order, have proposed that disabled and disabled people of any sort not be allowed to enter the country.
This is something that has happened in our country's history in the past. I'm not sure how laws have changed throughout the last five decades. But this sounds like a huge step backward. In my own family, which the family that raised me immigrated here from England after World War II, and one of the brothers is blind, and he was held in Ellis Island for a couple of months until a senator stepped in. Wayne Morse stepped in and helped him be reunited with his family here in the States. And he was held up because he was an undesirable immigrant, because being blind was assumed that you would not be a productive member of society. And to hear that we have come back to that, or are trying to get back to that, is disheartening in the extreme. Thank you,
and
Linda.
The Southern Poverty Law Center says that disabled people are among the most hate crimes abused.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. We should talk about rights of folks with physical and mental disabilities. This is a hugely important human rights issue here and elsewhere. So thank you again for your call this morning. We are out of time. And with that, holy bejeebies, good people, hang on to your seats. We're in 2019. It's a wild ride. Love each other, hold each other, practice solidarity like our lives depend on it, because in fact, they really do. And we'll be back next week.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place in Portland. The film hosts the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, the lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing. This is a crowdsourced event, and tickets are currently available for purchase. There will be a brief Q&A following the film. Again, that's a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place, 340 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 a.m. And we're about to hear Pacific Underground, which is a program for and by the Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. At 10, Valley Views looks at how the two-party political system thrives while freedom of choice dies. We'll round out the hour with Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, a Radio Geekly investigates video games' effect on other forms of media, both positive